The name George Washington has become a symbol of liberty and freedom wherever man has read the records of history. In man's long and bitter struggle for the right to be free, for the right to govern himself, George Washington is a guiding beacon as enduring as history itself. 209 years ago today, George Washington, American, was born. To him, to his principles of freedom, of unity, of tolerance, of democracy itself, this program is dedicated.
The unity of government, which constitutes you one people, is also now dear to you. It is justly so, for it is a main pillar in the edifice of your real independence, the support of your tranquility at home, your peace abroad, of your safety, of your prosperity, in every shape of that very liberty which you so highly prize. The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles. You have, in a common cause, fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint councils and joint efforts, of common dangers, sufferings, and successes.
This is a decisive hour in American history. What George Washington said almost 200 years ago is pertinent and meaningful today. For this reason, we have restored with faithful accuracy, from documents, letters, and other historical records, the wisdom, the ideals, the thoughts, and the hopes of George Washington for America. Playing George Washington will be the distinguished actor, writer, director, Orson Welles.
I want you to hear a story of America. A story of a people who came here to find a refuge of hope and security. I want you who live today to hear facts from an historical diary of one who faced a world as difficult and as troubled as your own. I want you, my countrymen, to know how we met those problems, how we faced them, and how we overcame them. It is April 19th, 1775. A fateful day in American history. First blood is shed in the American War of the Revolution.
Who is it?
Courier from the Continental Congress.
Just a minute.
What is it?
Important dispatch, sir.
Let me see it. You are hereby requested to attend the special meeting of the Second Continental Congress, which will sit in Philadelphia in May this year, 1775, for the purpose, among others, choosing a commander-in-chief of the Continental Armed Forces. Signed, John Hancock, President of the Congress.
Gentlemen, please.
Mr. President.
The gentleman from Massachusetts, John Adams.
Mr. President, members of the Congress, I believe that the commander-in-chief of the American army should be a man satisfactory to all. We want Virginia to support our New England cause. Therefore, we should give our suffrage to a commander-in-chief from Virginia.
Mr. President!
The gentleman from Virginia, Edmund Randolph.
I propose Colonel William Byrd, no. Commander of the Virginia Forces.
No. No. No!
I nominate General Andrew Lewis, that gallant soldier from Virginia.
No! He has neither the experience nor the ability.
I protest, sir.
And so do I, your
order, order! Mr. President! The gentleman from Massachusetts, John Adams.
Mr. President, I propose we end this bickering. I name for your consideration Colonel George Washington as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. Yes,
Mr. President.
The gentleman from Virginia, Patrick Henry.
If you speak of eloquence, there are others more experienced. If you speak of solid information and sound judgment, Colonel Washington is unquestionably the greatest man on the floor. Yes. I propose we take a vote.
Order. All in favor?
Aye!
Opposed? Then it is carried. Colonel Washington, this Congress has nominated you to be General and Commander-in-Chief of the Army of the United Colonies. Will you accept the position tendered you?
Yes, gentlemen, I accept it. Though I am truly sensible of the high honor done me in this appointment, yet I feel a great distress from a consciousness that my abilities and military experience may not be equal to the important trust. However, as the Congress desire it, I will enter upon the momentous duty and exert every power I possess in the service and for the support of this glorious cause. Philadelphia, June 18th, 1775. My dearest Martha, I'm now set down to write you on a subject which fills me with inexpressible concern. I've used every endeavor in my power to avoid it, not only from my unwillingness to part with you and the family, but from a consciousness of its being a trust too great for my capacity, and that I should enjoy more real happiness in 1 month with you at home than I have the most distant prospect of finding abroad, if my stay here were to be 7 times 7 years. But as it has been a kind of destiny that has thrown me upon this service, I shall hope that my undertaking it is designed to answer some good purpose. Your affectionate husband. Continental Congress of our nation drafted the document which I hold here in my hands. The Declaration of Independence. I'll read it to you. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Our numbers were quite inadequate to the task of opposing General Howe, being reduced by sickness, desertion, and political deaths. We're obliged to retire before the enemy. New York, north into White Plains. We retreat across the river to New Jersey. Across New Jersey to the Delaware. Few people knew the predicament we're in. On 1,000 accounts. Fewer still would believe if any disaster happened to these lines, from what cause it flowed. I've often thought how much happier I should have been if instead of accepting a command under such circumstances, I'd taken my musket on my shoulder and entered the ranks, or if I could have justified the measure to posterity, my own conscience, and retired to the back country and lived in a wigwam. If I shall be able to rise superior to these and many other difficulties, I shall most religiously believe that the finger of divine providence is in it. The hand of providence would seem to be in it indeed. For on Christmas Eve, we attacked Trenton, capturing 23 officers and 866 men. Justice to the officers and men, I must add that their behavior reflected the highest honor among them. Princeton, too, we established ourselves more firmly on the Delaware. The odds soon told. For at Brandywine, our small army was beaten and forced into retreat. Through the want of shoes and stockings, the hard frozen ground, you might have tracked the army from White Marsh to Valley Forge by the blood of their feet. Strong symptoms of discontent appeared in particular instances. Nothing but the most active efforts everywhere could avert a shocking catastrophe. Come in.
General Washington.
Yes, Colonel.
General Washington. The men are in a bad way, sir. 10,000 starving, frozen men. What you're asking them to do is impossible.
And what do you propose?
Surrender on whatever terms we can get, sir.
Mm-hmm. Are you cold, sir?
Of course.
Hungry?
Yes.
And discouraged?
Discouraged and beaten, too, sir.
Beaten? I'm cold. My home's a shelter like yours. I'm hungry. My food's no better than yours. I'm discouraged. What man wouldn't be? But beaten when we've nothing but a few wooden buildings to lose. Man, there's freedom to be gained.
The price is so great, sir.
We've fought long and hard together, haven't we?
Yes, sir.
And won sometimes, too. Haven't we?
Yes, sir.
Why can't we win again? And if we should win again, would the price then be too great? Would any price be too great for freedom? For liberty?
Colonel Washington, tell me. Do you really think we have a chance? Do you really believe that after this sort of sacrifice, that we can hold out?
Before God, before the men who entrusted me with this command, before all that I love,
I do believe it, Colonel.
I'll tell the men that, sir.